started. Okay, welcome. Oops, I'm sorry. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming. I'm Debbie Drennan. I'm with the iTech Center here at Parents Helping Parents. And today I have the wonderful Miss Jan Tuber.
Hello.
With me to help present on assistive technology and transitioning. So in case, for those who don't know who we are Parents Helping Parents iTech Center, and we have a lot of services we provide here in the San Jose area of California. We provide trainings on a variety of topics. Our signature service is the Techploration, where individuals can come into our center and find out about technologies around their goal area that they can explore further on their own. We do provide consultations to Department of Rehab, to school districts, to other teams that come in on different assistive technology areas. We do have a speech therapist that works with us as well, so we do have someone here with AAC or in communication expertise. We also have a volunteer who adapts items to switches, generally little toys for younger ones. And we are, of course, a member of the AT Network of California. So we do have a California toll-free number. So if anybody has any questions, just give us a call. We'll see what we can do to help you out. So that's who iTech is. And hopefully today, people will be learning things. Hopefully you will all learn about the different systems available out of high school that cover assistive technology, as well as start an understanding of the process for obtaining that assistive technology through those systems. We also hope that you become aware of rights and responsibilities for a successful transition, both for you as well as for the agencies you're working for, and then learn best practices for coordinating agencies during transition. So that's quite a bit. I do tend to talk fast. I'm sorry. Hopefully you can keep up. So first of all, just so that everyone is on the same page, I wanted to make sure everyone kind of had an understanding of what is assistive technology. These definitions about a device and a service are from IDEA, but they are held throughout rehab, vocational rehab, and through most of the different federal agencies also use similar or these exact terms. So a device, under the law, is any item, piece of equipment, or product system, whether acquired commercially off the shelf, modified, or customized, that is used to increase, maintain, or improve functional capabilities of an individual with a disability. The term does not include a medical device that is surgically implanted or the replacement of that device. And that last piece refers to specifically cochlear implants, but in the bigger picture it also refers to anything like a pacemaker or anything else that is implanted surgically. It is also a service, and a service is defined as any service that directly assists an individual with a disability in the selection, acquisition, or use of an assistive technology device. And the service is actually the crux of the assistive technology. Training is part of that service, and without the appropriate training, then this technology can be a complete failure. So service is really an essential part of assistive technology. Right. When people come into our center, we're just showing them devices. At the initial outcome is that they are becoming familiar with what's available. But it's really up to them to then trial out the devices, get the training they need on those devices so that they can be successful with them later. Without any of those components, this visit they may have had with us may have been for naught.
Right. And Deb, can you give us some examples of some common assistive technology devices?
Sure. Some common examples would be eyeglasses. I mean, let's face it, without my glasses, my readers, I can't see a thing anymore. Aging is terrible. A pencil grip or a pen grip is an assistive technology device. Picture representation of objects, that's assistive technology. If you've been in some of the classrooms, you'll see these word walls, just a big wall full of words. That can be assistive technology for some students.
So assistive technology can include very simple, inexpensive, low-tech items. It's not just software.
Exactly. It can be anything that helps you. Even items that are more higher-tech, like having a smartphone. But if you use the smartphone and you need to use the alarms on the smartphone, or organization, that becomes your assistive technology. Because without the alarms, you won't remember to go to your appointments. So that can become assistive technology, as well as magnifying text on computers, on-screen keyboards, and of course, text-to-speech software programs. So there's a lot of things that are assistive technology. So let's talk about funding assistive technology after school. We're going to be discussing several different systems that to review because I think one of the confusions people have is who pays for what. And so after school, once you're done, there are several systems you may or may not be involved in. The regional center is a system for those with developmental disabilities. The colleges are for those who want to go on to a 2 or 4 year college. Medical insurances to cover medical needs, employment, and or the Department of Rehab. You can be involved in one of these, you can be involved in all of these. And so it can be very, very confusing and headachy to get through them all. So we're going to go through all of these, first of all, and explain what they are, what their primary goals are. So when you're asking for assistive technology from one of these, you know how to ask it in a way that meets their primary goal functions. And then we're going to be going into how to get everybody to work together for your behalf. Okay? So first we're going to quickly review school districts. So quick review. We're going to talk about education. Somebody joined and doesn't have their mic muted on their computer, if they could mute it on the computer, that would be great because we're getting your feedback. I will have time for questions later. Thanks. Thank you. All right, now I can focus again. So quick review. In school,
all attendees have been muted.
Is goal
all driven. Attendees have been muted.
Thank you. So education services are goal driven through that IEP or individual education plan.
Are you talking about IDEA, Deb?
Yes. IDEA is the law, the federal law that governs school district services for those students who have an IEP. Because the IEP is a legal document that has goals and services written into it. To get assistive technology through a school district, it is a part of the goals and services. So AT is usually written into as a part of a goal on an IEP. Now, not every student with a disability in school has an IEP. They don't all qualify. Some of them have a 504. I have a son who is 14, and he has a 504. In fact, we just redid it this year. And he has ADHD and dysgraphia, but he doesn't qualify for an IEP. So he gets his reasonable accommodations, including his assistive technology, through his 504 plan. So that is available as well. So, you've gotten through school, you're now in high school, you had your AT purchased, you're ready to graduate. What happens to that AT that's been purchased by the school district? Where does it go? Who owns it? If the school purchased it, it is owned by the school and goes back to the school upon exiting the system. So it's the school's. You don't get to keep it.
For example, my daughter had some assistive technology software, some text-to-speech software on a laptop. However, we personally purchased the laptop. So when she graduated, we owned the laptop, but the school owned the software that they loaded onto it. So they wanted to remove the software until, for their particular licensing agreement, it didn't harm them to let us keep it on.
What a shame.
So we were able to convince them to let us keep it because it didn't diminish their own supply of technology for their students.
Right. But on the other hand, the school district for my son, who's now in college, had purchased his laptop and the software. So upon graduation, we had to turn everything back into the school and start all over again. And that can be a time killer.
Deb, did they give you the option of purchasing it from them?
No, they did not, because in California, schools can sell equipment materials costing less than $2,500 to private individuals, but only as long as, one, it is not needed for the educational benefits of other students, or it is obsolete. Either way, you have to have unanimous school board approval for that sale. If the cost is more than $2,500, the equipment needs to go up to bidding. That's as law in California. So because John's laptop would be valuable for another student, it wasn't even an option for us. So that tends to be what happens. So how do you work this whole thing in with the school districts? Well, if you have an IEP, it is required by law that the school district provides a transition plan to students 16 and above. Transition services must be included when the student reaches 16 or earlier if deemed necessary by the IEP team. Now, in that transition plan, there are three mandated areas to be addressed: instruction, community experiences, and employment and other post-school objectives. So all these three areas need to be addressed in that transition plan. And to get assistive technology, it needs to be in each area to be considered in that transition plan. So let me give an example, because that's like, huh? So here's an example. We're going to talk about good old Joe. We like Joe. Joe would like to attend community college upon transition, but he is concerned that he will not be able to keep up. So when they're writing that transition plan at the school level, some possible services might be that he, one, explore services available at the Disabled Students Program at the community college, so he starts understanding what's out next. Two, assist Joe in learning how to define his learning needs. And we're going to get into why that is so important in a little bit. Three, teach Joe what his rights are for getting his learning needs met. Another thing could be written, it would be to explore the assistive technology options to assist Joe in meeting his learning needs at a college level. All of these things could be addressed in the high school transition service plan.
Now, Deb, who can attend this transition meeting?
Well, when we're talking about agency coordination, you can invite other agencies to IEPP meetings before the student exits out by getting their diploma or at age 22 of the school district. You can enroll. Now, a student can enroll in the Department of Rehabilitation if they're planning on going into employment or college and then employment during the last year of their being in school. But services won't begin for that student until they've exited out of high school unless they are found eligible by the Department of Rehab Counselor for their program called the Transition Partnership Project, or TPP. That's only available to students in their last year of school if the DOR counselor finds them eligible. All other students need to wait until they've exited out or graduated, and then the DR service is going to start.
All attendees have been
invite
unmuted.
A regional center caseworker to participate.
Does someone all have, attendees have been unmuted.
Does someone have a question? Thought I heard something. Okay, I will continue babbling. If someone has a question, just flag me down somehow. You can put something in the chat window or raise your hand, and hopefully I'll see that. I apologize if I don't, but I will give it a chance for questions at the end of this section. So you can always invite a regional center caseworker to participate in an IEP. Someone has music rolling. Can you please turn off your music? Thanks. Okay. So anyway, back to who you can invite to your to coordinate from the school. You can invite regional center. You can enroll in the Department of Rehab. Department of Rehab won't send someone to the IEP unless you're in the Transition Partnership Project plan with them. Then they will. You can always invite your regional center caseworker to participate in an IEP with you. And if you're going to go into college, you can always share appropriate educational records documenting your necessary accommodations with the college's disabled student program or service at which you are enrolled. In other words, you need to be accepted before you can't give them your information, but you can do that towards the end of your last year in school. And hopefully that makes the transition smoother. So, any questions? Now I'm going to ask, any questions on anything that I just indicated about what the IEP and transition and 504 looks like with AT? I think everyone's unmuted, so you can just say hello.
All attendees have been unmuted.
Okay, it looks like I don't have any questions, so I'm going to go brief.
All attendees have been unmuted.
You're all unmuted now. So, okay, if there's no questions, I'll move on. I'm going to talk about employment. So this is easy, for me anyway. For a comprehensive overview of employment and assistive technology, the AT Network had a great training just in June 20th, by Hillary Sklar, called Your Rights to AT in the Workplace. And I've got the website up here, www.atnet.org/training/archive-trainings.php. Go there. I'm not even going to go there because she was so comprehensive and so good, I did not want to try to reinvent her wheel. So that's employment. And I apologize if you wanted more, but really, if she did such a fabulous job, I really just invite you to go there to find out more about employment and assistive technology. So we're actually going to start now into regional centers. Okay. So regional center, what is that? First of all, to be a client of the regional center, your eligibility is based on a developmental disability. So it's for those students who, those individuals rather, who are have a some sort of a developmental disability. My older son is a client of the regional center. He has cerebral palsy, which is considered a developmental disability. Some individuals with autism, if it impacts them greatly enough, are also regional center clients, because that is considered a developmental disability. They are a funder of last resort. That is what they are for all, regardless. You must show the regional center that every other possible funding source, insurance, Department of Rehab, has been denied. And you must also show that the assistive technology you're asking them for is needed to meet an IPP, an individual program plan, goal. So you have to run around to these other sources and get denial letters before the regional center will even consider kicking in. But what do they pay for? What are their goals? That's what you need to know. In order to get the regional center to even be interested in you, you have to know what their goals are. So their priority is, one, allow children to live with families. Two, allows adults to live as independently as possible in the community, and I'm emphasizing that because that's key for assistive technology right there. Or three, allow all people with developmental disabilities to positively and meaningfully interact with people without disabilities. Those are their priority goals. That's out of the Welfare and Institution Code. So when you're asking the regional center to provide assistive technology, keep in mind their priority goals. And also, you need their mandate to assist the consumer's clients in obtaining services from another agency. So let's say you are a client of a regional center and you are needing to get a laptop. To be able to be at home and interact socially, as well as be able to go on Craigslist and now all of the different online employment opportunities to look for a job, to gain employment, to maybe even independently shop from home because it's hard for you to get out to the stores, as well as have the social interaction you need with non-disabled people. Well, one of the first things your regional center caseworker might be able to do is to help you with some other places like Department of Rehab in obtaining that tool. That's one of the things they're mandated to do. If the regional center decides that they'll just go ahead and purchase that laptop for you because it meets your IPP goals, it is owned technically by the regional center. But that consumer or client has exclusive use of it. So let's say you are a regional center client, you live in Sacramento, you move to LA, you take it with you. But if you go outside of California, you go from Sacramento to New York, you are supposed to turn that equipment back into the regional center. So keep that in mind. Now if you're involved in a day program, that day program, and you need a piece of assistive technology tools to participate in that day program, it's up to the day program to provide that assistive technology tool for the clients to meet their day program goals. So if, let's say, you need a wheelchair ramped band to participate in a day program social outings, it is up to the day program to provide that wheelchair ramped band, not your regional center, through you individually. I hope that makes sense. So that's kind of how that works. So what are some of their limitations? Well, the regional center must notify you in writing if, one, it does not have enough money to provide the equipment listed on an IPP. In other words, they run out of money. And they can tell you this, but they have to put it in writing that they have to tell you they ran out of money, which seems kind of strange to me, but okay. Two, if they want to cut back, change, or stop a service on the IPP, they must notify you in writing. Or three, they refuse to provide a service you've requested. Again, you must get notified in writing. You can appeal. You request a fair hearing postmarked within 10 days of the receipt of that written notice. You do that, a stay is put in place on your IPP while it goes through fair hearing. And I'm not, how to appeal and who to contact is on the regional center websites for each individual regional center. So that is how you would appeal that. Okay? So are there any questions? I don't know if we're muted or not muted. I get confused. I'm hearing lots of voices. So if we're not muted, I'm open to questions about the regional centers.
Hi, go ahead.
Okay. If you do come up with a question later, let me know. Yeah. Do you have a question? Okay. I didn't hear the question if there was one. So if you can get into the chat box, I can answer it there. Okay? Otherwise, we'll try later. Okay. So now we're going to delve into medical insurances. Oh, no. So, for medical insurance, I'm kind of glumping everything together for this presentation. It includes Medi-Cal, HMOs like Kaiser, Medicare, private insurances, VA, etc. To get Medi-Cal, it is based on a financial need. To get Medicare, people get this confused, that's why I put this in here, is age or certain medical disabilities qualify for Medicare. Sometimes people put Medi-Cal and Medicare and they interface them. They're very different. So just wanted to make sure people understood that difference. And other insurances, you can stay on another insurance through employment or through your parents up to age 26 or pay privately. So that's how you would get the medical insurances. What AT does medical insurance pay for? Does it pay for software or a laptop to house the software, Deb? Ha! Wouldn't that be nice? No! It pays for durable medical equipment only. Sorry, DME. And that's what they call it, is DME coverage. Okay? And that includes mobility devices, walkers, wheelchairs, speech prosthetics, AAC. So if you need communication, it could pay for AAC or cochlear implants. Orthotics, if you need them, etc. Private insurances may not have DME coverage, durable medical equipment coverage, or only pay a percentage of it. You can have medical insurance and not have DME coverage. So be aware when you're going into a new job and you're looking at the medical insurance coverage of it, if you need medical equipment like wheelchairs, walkers, etc., make sure you have DME coverage, or you could pay a lot of money out of pocket on that insurance. Most times through private insurances, it pays a percentage, generally 80% of what the DME cost is. If you do have dual insurance, like you have Kaiser and Medi-Cal, secondary insurance, the Medi-Cal, would pay the copay. So there is a way of getting things to work together if you are lucky enough to have two insurances. Now let's talk a little bit about Medi-Cal. Medi-Cal, in order to get AT through them, you need to get a treatment authorization request, or a TAR. And that only pays for certain items
up to a certain cost. For example, you need a power wheelchair. Medi-Cal will only pay for power wheelchairs for people who need them for mobility in their home. So maybe you don't walk so well, but you can get around your house independently with maybe a walker, but you really want that power chair for being out in the community, Medi-Cal may say, oh, sorry, no, you're independent in mobility in your home. So we won't pay for that power chair.
What if you're not independent on your college campus?
Why do you ask the tough questions? Generally, if you're not independent on a college campus, they're going to ask your medical insurance to cover that. So there are ways of indicating to your medical insurance that you need that powered mobility for in your home or in the dorm, safety and mobility. Because once you're in college, you're no longer in a home, but you're in a very public setting, usually in the dorms, and therefore you need the powered mobility because it's the only way you're going to get down that long hallway to the bathroom and back safely. So there are ways of doing about it. So, and yes, oh great and powerful Oz, there are AP in higher ed, and I will be talking about those in just a moment. I promise I'll get there. The other thing I want to talk about Medi-Cal is eyeglasses. Guess what? Unless you're pregnant, under 21, or in a nursing home, they're no longer covered under Medi-Cal. So, oops, I think that's silly, but there you go. That's Medi-Cal for you. So, for all medical insurance requirements, you need a doctor's prescription. You need to show medical need. If assessment is needed by the medical insurance will pay for that assessment. So you need, let's say you need a speech communication device, medical insurance will pay for that assessment to get the proper medical speech communication device for you. And you may need to go to providers within their network of providers if it's available. The process can take many steps. This is an example. This is a true story from my own personal experience with my son, John, with his power chair. He needed a new power chair as a senior in high school. So what's the process? And he's got Kaiser. So we're talking Kaiser here. Okay. So this is what the process is for Kaiser. Dr. Wright wrote the prescription for an assessment for his power wheelchair. The prescription for that assessment first goes to the Kaiser, in this case, DME office, and they approve the assessment. The DME office, sends that approval to a provider to do the actual assessment for the power wheelchair. The provider does the assessment, sends the findings and recommendations back to the DME office. The DME office reviews and ask questions for clarification. Then they send to the doctor a request for a prescription for a specific device. The doctor signs that prescription, sends it back to the DME office. The DME office then processes it and sends that authorization to the provider, who finally orders it. As you can see, this can take a very long time. So if you're an user of especially something like a power wheelchair, and the power wheelchair is looking to be on its last legs, I advise you to get started early, or you could be out of luck. So, and if the DME does get denied, there is always an appeal process through each insurance. Okay. So now, are there any questions about medical insurances and assistive technology and DME? Okay, looks like there's no questions, so I'm going to continue on to our favorite topic, Department of Rehab. So is Jacob on board with us today? I wanted to start with your story if you're here, Jacob. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and click through slides, and Jacob's going to start his story. Go ahead, Jacob.
I have had really respect with the rehab that I
So it sounds like Jacob learned a couple of lessons. If I can summarize your last slide again, Jacob, that would be okay. So it sounded like some of the things that that the Department of Rehab should, one, make sure that vendors are on time and polite when they're dealing with client needs. Two, believe what their clients are telling them. And three, provide clients with ways to learn about their AT needs. But you also learned that clients should, A, be encouraged and have ways to give feedback back to the AT vendors, B, be advocate to be treated with respect in dealing with Department of Rehab, and do research on their AT needs, so kind of have an idea of what you might need before you get there. Does that summarize it well, Jacob?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions for Jacob about his experiences that he's had with the Department of Rehab? Okay, it doesn't sound like there's any questions, so we're going to go ahead and move on. Thank you, Jacob. So that's just one experience that one person had with the Department of Rehab. I've had my experiences with my son, too, and I know, Jan, you've had experiences with your daughter. So let's talk a little bit about DR. So, their mission statement, again, always know what their goal is when you're dealing with an agency. What is their goal? So that's why I put down what the mission statement of Department of Rehab is. The California Department of Rehabilitation works in partnership with consumers and other stakeholders to provide services and advocacy resulting in employment, independent living, and equality for individuals with disabilities. That is their mission statement. That is how you get AT. And providing services that lead to employment means that they will also provide services that lead to your training to achieve that employment. And that's where college comes in. So, yeah, so when we get to colleges, we're going to talk about not what DR would provide for those who are, but for the department, but the disabled students programs, which is different. So in this part, we're going to talk about how Department of Rehab can provide tools that you might need for college, okay, if it's for employment. So here it is. When you apply to Department of Rehab, you must be found to be severely or significantly disabled, and they call those categories 1 or 2, to receive services. Okay,
and I hate the terms, but they're not my terms. If found to be in just categories, it just, category 3, just disabled, and you applied after March 30th of 2011, you will be found eligible for services, but no services will be administered this fiscal year due to the budget mess in California. And that's off of the Department of Rehab website, and I have a link if you wanted to check that for yourself. So be aware, okay, if you're found Category 1 or 2, you will receive services. If you're found Category 3, you're on the wait list.
Deb, can you tell us who is considered a Category 1 and 2 and who's considered a Category 3 disability?
Why, no, I cannot. I have no clue. That's a really good question, and probably if I were a DR counselor or if we had any DR counselors on board, they might be able to help you. But actually, that's a really good question. I could not tell you how they define their categories. So that would be something to find out. Good question.
Maybe that website would give
maybe the DOR website might have that. I don't know. I didn't see it on there, but it may be embedded in deeply. So good question. So let's talk about what DOR can do in terms of assistive technology. Assistive technology can be a part of that individual plan for employment, the IPE, for the consumer. Okay, so now you're a regional center client, you have the IPP, you just came out of education, so you have an IEP, and now you're going to get the IPE from Department of Rehab. Confused yet? anyway, so the IPE must be related, the assistive technology must be related to your vocational goals, okay? And AT is both, again, even in Department of Rehab world, it is both a device and a service. Training on that device, obtaining that device, assessments for the device, etc. So it's both of those things. So, for example, my son needed a laptop for going on to college, which was written into his IPE. He needed a laptop with specialized equipment to go along with it for access. So they first had him assessed so that he'd get the proper laptop and with the proper equipment. And then they obtained it, gave it to him, and then they provided training on that. And actually, let's truth be told, they did not actually provide the training, but they could have provided the training on it. I provided the training because I knew how to use it. But if I didn't know how, they would have. That would not have been a problem. So that's how that works.
Now, initially, sometimes when you're still in high school, you've already had an assessment or had AT written into your IEP, and then the Department of Rehab can look at that to determine your continued AT needs for college, so you don't need to have a specific assessment. Right. Or if you go to a college that specializes in services for your disability, they might require all their entering freshmen to have specific technology, and that information then needs to be sent to your voc rehab counselor and approved for purchase.
Right.
Deb, I see there's a question here for you.
Oh, it's more of, if you got a job through DOR, can you receive AT from them?
Yes.
The answer is yes. Somebody answered that for me. Yes, you're right. Yes, you can. So, AT falls under the category of rehabilitation technology in the Department of Vocational Rehab world. That's how they categorize as rehab technology. That in itself has three categories: rehabilitation engineering, assistive technology devices, and assistive technology services. All three categories. Okay? So that's where it falls in the world of DR. Now, I had to say this, I'm sorry. I have to do a quick word about personal vehicles. This is straight off of the rehab government DR website. So this isn't me saying this about adapted cars and vans. So let's say you need to have an adapted car so that you can drive yourself to school and back. This is what they say about that. We do not have a van program for individuals. All transportation needs are met as part of an overall consumer case plan. Vans are the most expensive transportation option for consumers. If there is another equally reasonable and less expensive method, such as public transportation or special transit, that is the method we used. So if you do need to get an adapted car, you might be able to make a case if you lived out in, you know, a small town off in the gold country and you don't have reasonable, accessible public transportation or special transit available to you, yes, rehab could get you that adapted car or van at that point. You live in the middle of where we live, San Jose, where there's light rail, there's buses, there's outreach, you know, services available, that is the method they're going to make you use. So that's sort of something to be aware of. You can still make a case for it. You can still try if you feel it's that important that you've lost jobs, and some people have lost jobs because of poor transit. You can make a case that you really need it or you're going to lose this job too. And that's what I would do in that case. Okay, so I just had to say a word about it, and I'm going to move on because it's a hot topic. And moving on. So let's do some FAQs. Okay, does Department of Rehab ever take back the assistive technology like the schools do? If the vocational plan is completed successfully and the tools are needed for employment, no, they do not take it back. If the client drops from Department of Rehab or does not otherwise successfully complete their plan, they can reclaim the tools. So that's how that works. So Deb, if you're a college student and then you drop out or fail out of college, can voc rehab then revoke your standing and take back your assistive technology?
What they would probably do is re-look at your IPE and see, okay, college wasn't the way for you to get vocational employment. What is another way? What are the tools you need to get the kind of job you want? And maybe you still need those same tools, but maybe college wasn't the right venue for you to get to employment.
So they can modify your plan?
You can modify the plan. And so this is where communication with your voc rehab counselor is so critical. A lot of students, especially with learning disabilities, have a really hard time in college, especially if it's a college that doesn't have a good disabled support system put into it, and a lot of colleges just don't. Some students can fail out of college because the professors aren't following the plan, they can't connect quickly enough with the DSS to get accommodations for testing, they're failing tests, they're not keeping up in the reading because they don't have the appropriate tools available, and they can fall apart. If that person is in close contact with that Department of Rehab counselor, say, look, this isn't working for me, I need to revise my plan, that's one thing. If the person just ends up failing, and then notifies the Department of Rehab after they've already failed, that's another thing.
So what you're saying is it's probably a good idea for the student to maintain good communication and contact with their voc rehab as things are starting to turn rather than wait till the end and it falls apart completely.
Exactly. Stay in communication. Now, does the DOR require that clients have a full AT assessment in order to purchase tools? What the DOR requires is they do have a need to have documentation that the tools being provided meet the client's needs. It does not necessarily have to be a full assessment, especially if the client has been using those tools prior to entering the DOR system. So if they can, instead of having a full assessment done to get the same tools they've been using since, you know, 16, they can go to a center like ours and have a write-up done that, yes, we talked with the client, we had the client show me their use of those systems, we discussed the needs in college, these are the appropriate tools for this client to use to go on into college or to go on into employment. And sometimes that's all you need. So no, it doesn't have to be a full assessment, especially if the client's already using very similar tools. So that's something to know as well. So, now, I'm sure you've all heard stories of somebody getting something one way and somebody not getting that same thing, and they're both clients of the Department of Rehab. Why is that? Why is that? That's a really good question. There is Department of Rehab. Each regional office has their own policies. Now, they are under the auspices of state mandates for Department of Rehab.
but each office has separate policies on how to follow those state mandates. Something to keep in mind, office policies can be questioned. State mandates cannot. So didn't you have an example of that with Allie too, with your daughter?
Well, yes, my daughter goes to school out of state, and her college actually wanted her to purchase a laptop that was loaded with the assistive technology that they required. However, her voc rehab office, the Department of Rehabilitation office, required that all assistive technology be purchased from California vendors. So that was a policy decision. It actually cost them more money.
Whoops!
But that was their requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, be aware that is not, if it's an office policy, you can question it, and that was an office policy, so had you had that information, you could have questioned it, but if it's a state mandate, you really can't. Now, there's a question that we have here, somebody who has a senior in high school, although he applies for a specific it sounds like he is qualifies for a specific LD, learning disability. He has an IEP, but this person's not clear what the specific learning disability is according to that assessment. In other words, what is the exact name of it? How do I know what assistive technology and tools may be available to help him? Good question. What you can do while he's still under an IEP is you can ask for an assistive technology assessment by the school district because he's still in school.
Now, Deb, an assistive technology, just to clarify, an assistive technology assessment is not the same as an ed psych or a disability assessment,
right,
which is required for disability services. So they're two separate
right.
assessments.
But with the assistive technology assessment, you can find out what tools may be available to help with the learning needs he may have. Let's say he struggles with reading. He understands orally very well, but he has difficulty comprehending the written word, you know, gets confused in sentences. Maybe a text-to-speech might work. So there's a lot of different tools available, and you're right, it's hard to know how to fly through them all. And that's why I think an assistive technology assessment, especially since he is still under the IEP and it is mandated under IDEA, may be the way to go for that one. Okay, and again, if you have further questions, we can discuss offline on that as well. Jan Tuber happens to be our LD expert here, so you may want to connect in with that one. So, Department of Rehab does have client assistance programs, okay? These are independent advocates who are there just to provide information, to advocate for you, et cetera, if you need that within the Department of Rehab. And I've included both their voice and their TTY numbers here. So if you have a question or if you're struggling with your DR counselor, you can call the client assistance program and see if they can help you. Another thing you can be aware of that people don't know is you can ask for a different counselor at any time. If your current DR counselor is not working for you, ask to change counselors. It may or may not be better, but you can always try. Because we all have our stories with Department of Rehab. All right, so any questions about Department of Rehab specifically that anybody has? Because now we're going to delve into college. Okay, great. We're going to move into college. Jan, you're up.
Okay. So Deb's covered some of the rights and responsibilities of students or clients of the various service organizations, and she's covered the laws for that K through 12 period under an IDEA and IEP. So college is a little bit different. Now in California we have the community colleges, state colleges, the universities. So all of those colleges receive federal funding, and as a result they're required to provide equal access for all students. And most of these colleges, if not all of them, have some sort of disabled student service program. Now these programs will vary in the scope and the type of services they provide, which is why it's really important to do your homework. And if you're looking into a specific college, really visiting and delving into what services are there to make sure that those match your needs. Some smaller private colleges may not actually have a disabled student service program, but they might provide certain accommodations. Now, in order to avail yourself of these services, though, you must self-disclose to your disabled student service department. And that means that without that self-disclosure, if you do not identify yourself, you will not be covered by those protective laws.
Because, again, in college, there is no IEP.
Colleges will provide access to the assistive technology that's needed if it's required to receive equal access to the curriculum. So that what often colleges, oops, is somebody not muted again?
That's okay. Just go on.
Okay. So some colleges will provide actual assistive technology in their office so that you need to come to their department to actually use the assistive technology, or they will help you obtain assistive technology for your classroom. What they will not do is provide assistive technology for independent living. So all those mobility tools and things, you have to refer back to what Debbie's already told us.
So what we mean by that is, so let's say you're going to a four-year university, public, you use a wheelchair. The college is required to provide you with an accessible dorm with accessible classrooms. They will move a classroom if they need to, if you're taking that class. So maybe it's on the third floor, they move it down to the first floor so you can get to it. And that's done through the DSS office. But they will not provide you with
The power wheelchair.
The power wheelchair. They will not provide you with anything you need within your dorm room specifically for you to be more independent, like door opener. Well, they will provide the door opener for the main door, but let's say you want to open and close your closet door independently, they'll just say, just take the closet door off. Or they won't provide you with maybe a bench so that you can get from the floor into your bed independently. They will not provide that. So those are independent living tools they do not provide.
So again, in high school, there was the IDEA and the IEP. In college, there's the Civil Rights Law, ADA, and 504. So under this, and there's a link there if you want to go directly to the source for that, for information about the difference, and it compares and contrasts IDEA with ADA. So there's a link right under that for you if you're interested. So in college, documentation is required in order to prove that you do have a disability and do have the right to equal access. And what they require for that documentation is a full assessment, and they want it to be no more than 3 years old. And going back to the Department of Voc Rehab, this is where Voc Rehab can be very helpful, because then they can provide and pay for the assessment for you.
Right. But again, if you have an IEP and you're going straight from high school into college, sometimes that IEP plus a doctor's note or a therapist, physical therapist, occupational therapist, speech therapist, ed therapist, letter on their letterhead indicating your disability, sometimes that's all that you need. So it doesn't have to be a whole lot. It just depends on where you're at. But I know your daughter had to have one because she's transferring from a two-year to a four-year.
Right, but she had her assessment. We made sure that when she was in high school that she had a recent assessment by the 11th grade, so that when she applied to colleges, it was in that three-year realm. But because now it's over 3 years, she had to have another assessment, which her Voc Rehab counselor did provide. Students, now the difference here again is that when you're applying to colleges, you have the right to equal access, but there's no right to additional consideration. So you have to meet all the qualifications that any student would have to meet. You have to be otherwise qualified for admission despite your disability.
Right.
Okay? And then when you're there, there's no RSP, there's no special day class. You participate in the general curriculum of the college with all the students. So your instructors, another big difference between IDEA and ADA is that in high school or in grade school, you might have had modifications as well as accommodations written into your IEP. In college, there are no modifications. You can't turn in a paper that's 2 pages instead of the required 10. You can't study you know, you can't do every other math problem. You have to do them all. So there's no modifications. There's only accommodations that will not alter the content or the goals of the course. So now in college, the biggest thing here is that you're in control.
No!
Okay, there's no RSP teacher advocate. There's no parent. There's no IEP to protect you. It's really all about you going after what you need.
In fact, most of the Disabled Student Service programs, if you're a parent and you're calling, they won't even talk to you. And they'll say, nope, I'm sorry, this is private between this student and us.
Well, right, and especially after the age of 18, they can't speak to your parents without your permission, your written permission. But the main thing is they won't anyway.
Pretty much.
So again, if you feel that you need accommodations to succeed in college, you must self-disclose. And that's period.
End of discussion.
Now, but beyond self-disclosing, you also have to take the initiative, because they will not go after you and say, Jan, what is it you need to do well in this college? Or what do you need in this class? Because I see your grades are not up to par. They are not going to be checking on you. They are not going to be following you. They are not going to be doing any follow-up whatsoever. So that means that you need to take the initiative to really get to know your support personnel in the DSS department, know your instructors intimately, and get the help that you need. You need to know how to navigate through the college services. Now, even though you self-disclosed and the DSS department is going to be coordinating your services, they only give a brief summary of what you need and what your accommodation is in a letter to your instructor. They won't go into any detail about your disability. If there's things that you feel are essential for your instructor to know, then it's up to you to tell them. And that protects your privacy. And again, it also puts the onus on you to take the initiative to disclose what you feel is essential to your success. When you're in those classes, you will be graded by the same standard as all students, regardless of the means with which you provide your work. So if one of your accommodations is to record your test responses orally into a tape recorder, your content will be graded just as if you had written it in class. If you're typing your tests instead of handwriting them, whatever your accommodation is, you'll still be graded by the same standards.
Right, and let's real quickly go through, just so people understand, the difference between voc rehab services provided and services that DSS can do. Let's do some quick sort of DSS common services so people understand.
Okay.
They will provide note takers for a class. So if you have a student, you yourself cannot take good notes, they will write a note taker. They will provide a scribe for taking tests if you cannot write well, so that you can have someone else, you go into a separate room with that scribe and do it with them. They will provide extra time to complete the work as long as the work is done by the end of the semester, or by the end of the quarter, depending on what system the college is. But they won't provide, obviously, beyond that.
They'll provide interpreters for the deaf.
They will provide interpreters for the deaf. They will provide alternative formatted textbooks. So if you need large print, if you need braille, if you need electronic text so that you can put it on your computer, they will provide that as well. Do the colleges fund technology that are primarily used at home, but for homework assignments? The answer is no. Most colleges will have a place where you as a student go, whether it be in the DSS office, in the library, that is a station that is loaded with what I call the common, quote-unquote, technologies for learners at this level. And that student has access to that either during set times or if it's in the library when the library is open. So the colleges will not pay for technologies that are used at home for homework assignments. Again, that's where Department of Rehab would come in, and they would be your funder. Another question, somebody wants to know if they can ask for an assessment for the 12th grader now from the high school or obtain an independent assessment. Yes, go ahead and ask for that assessment now from the high school, so you have all your ducks in a row. Although if the last one was in 10th grade, 11, 12, they're still within that 3-year period. So it depends on how you want to work that, but I would work on getting the assistive technology assessment this year if they haven't had one already.
And going back to Owen's question about colleges funding technology for home or homework, it's really not the college that's funding the technology. They're just providing access to it so that the student has equal access to the curriculum. So, for example, the DSS department might have a LiveScribe pen available for loan. They might have a text-to-speech software or a Braille software. They might even provide specialized tutors. But they're not going to buy the assistive technology for you. What they will do is also coordinate the services and obtain electronic text or alternate text if that's what you need. And they will have a process by which to do that and requirements and things that you need to do to obtain that.
Yeah, and they will train as well on their technologies they have available. So mm-hmm. Let's say you are a student, you need to have something like a Kurzweil software because you have a learning disability. And the lab, the DSS lab, has Kurzweil software in it. They will train you on the use of that software when you get to that school so that you know how to use it. So that is something they also do at the DSS. Okay.
The two top transition challenges that have been identified, and at the bottom of this slide there is a URL if you would like to go see that study, but the two top challenges that have been identified are for students by the College Disability Services are that students are often unaware of their own strengths and challenges. So in other words, that they're not coming into college with a good understanding of their disability and what their strengths are that they can leverage and what their challenges are that they need to circumvent. So this brings back a really important point that connects to self-advocacy. You have to be aware of, you need to know yourself before you can explain yourself to others and get the services that you need. And a good place to start is before you even reach college age, right? So that means participating in IEP meetings, being a part of developing your goals, learning how to talk to your teachers about your disability. So it's really important to have a clear understanding of who you are before you even enter college. And the other area that they noticed was really lacking was, again, that students were not prepared to advocate for themselves and were clueless about navigating through the college system.
Well, now, that has to be, and truthfully, as a parent, I know I tend to want to jump in for my kids. So if there's any youth here, you have to understand we are so used to wanting to help and doing for our kids that sometimes you as youth need to tell us to butt out and that you are going to handle this, that this is something you want to talk about and that you want to run your meetings and that we are going to be the ones to sit back and that if you need our help, we are there for you, we've got your back, that you're going to do it. Because it's really hard, as you know, as parents like to help.
And parents can be great role models for learning how to advocate for yourself, but we need to know when to start pulling
when to
back.
Stop.
but navigating the college system, again, kind of refers back to doing your homework and really checking. There's a lot of resources available to the general college population, tutoring, office hours for your teachers, maybe study groups, different little seminars that maybe the library offers. Know what's available so that you can check out and see if any of these quote-unquote non-specialized services can give you some additional support or the support that you need. And know the process. Get to know your disability center well so you know how each college has a different process for when you have to let them know and how you let them know if you need any kind of alternative text or how to let them know. For example, Southern Oregon University, I visited that college recently, and they have a whole computerized system. You don't even need to go in there. You don't even need to introduce yourself. It's all done by computer in terms of you need a note taker for this class, or you need a tutor for that class, or you need extra time, and then they take care of it. So each college has their own process, and you need to discover what that process is so that you can avail yourself of that help.
And actually, something that I recommend is when you're starting to look at colleges, don't just take the college tour. Take yourself into the DSS office as well and see if you can chat with someone in there. And get a sense of what do they offer. Are they comfortable with someone with your needs, learning needs? Have they had others like you? Do they have the tools that you need easily available? When we were out touring with my son, we found out that there was one college he had been thinking about that went off the list after talking to them in the Disabled Student Services office. So something to be aware of. Okay? So on to next.
Okay. So, sorry. Our phone that keeps ringing here.
Hang on, we're going to unplug. Go on.
Give me one second here.
Okay. Just go on.
Okay, so is everyone familiar with Bookshare.org? Raise your hand if you're not. Okay. Everybody knows.
Okay.
A few people. So Bookshare is an organization that provides Bookshare is an organization that provides alternate text to students who have reading disabilities. So you might want to go to their website, which is on there, www.bookshare.org, to get more information. Membership is free for students
who have a qualifying disability.
And it's also free for a variety of organizations and educational facilities so that they can provide textbooks through this organization.
And a lot of people think, if you do know Bookshare, you may think it's only through high school. It's actually through age 25. So keep that in mind if you're working
with older. It does include post-secondary.
It does include the post-secondary as well.
And the reason that I have the slide on here is because they do have a variety of books in electronic format, which means Braille or audio tapes or electronic content for text-to-speech. And they have a wide range of topics from transition to college to transition to work or adult life. They have information about a variety of careers and interviews and job search skills and interviewing skills. So it's a good resource if you need alternative materials on those kinds of topics.
Okay, so now Rosalind couldn't be with us today, but I'm going to go ahead and tell her story. Rosalind is actually a very good self-advocate, and she works in both the regional center and the Department of Rehabilitation. So a little bit about Rosalind. She is 25 years old and has had cerebral palsy since birth. As a result of her disability, she has made use of several social services throughout her life, including special education, regional center, and the Department of Rehabilitation. And her extensive experience with these and similar programs has made her a great self-advocate. So her educational, vocational, and independent living goals. So she's very aware of what she wants to do in the future. Her educational goal is to obtain a master's degree in rehab counseling. That would have been great if she was here. We could have asked her a lot of questions. Her vocational goals is to obtain employment with either the Department of Rehab or another rehabilitation agency. Her independent living goal is to obtain an apartment at the appropriate time and live independently with the help of an independent living specialist, or an ILS, once a week. So those are her goals. So she has well-defined goals. Setting the goals that she wants to reach. Before she goes to a meeting, she already has a pretty clear picture of the goals she wants for the year or other required time. This decreases the likelihood that she will use her support team members as a crutch and increases her potential for self-advocacy. So she goes in there with a real clear picture of what she wants to have done. She also has a pretty clear picture of the resources she needs, so that all she needs to do is get that authorization. So she does her homework before she goes to a meeting.
And also, it sounds like she really understands her own disability and her strengths and weaknesses, so she can come up with the information that she needs to share with her counselor.
So, effective use of support team and location. In her meetings, it is important for her to do most of the talking. So she considers the type of meeting she is going to as she considers the people she wants on her support team. She also tries to make sure that she has picked a location she's comfortable with. For example, with Regional Center, her counselor often meets with her at her current school. Something people don't know you can do, but you can do that because offices can be intimidating. You're on their turf. So she picks neutral territory.
Well, and she's taking control of the meeting,
which is great. So, and how does she get those goals met? By keeping communication open. There are many ways she uses to keep in contact with both her counselor at DOR and the Regional Center, including emails and phone calls. The most important thing is to keep the lines of communication open. It makes the job of the counselors a lot easier, she finds. So again, back to that open line of communication. Assisting in meeting the goals, doing some of the legwork. Part of making sure she gets what she needs is making sure that the process continues moving forward. Aside from regularly updating her counselors, she is responsible, particularly in DOR, for calculating the cost of the books and supplies each semester, as well as remembering to apply for financial aid each year. Oh, crud, I haven't done that yet. Oops, I have to do that with John. He told me to and I forgot. My bad. Sorry, John. Also, at the end of the term, she is responsible for forwarding her final grade so that her counselor at DOR can see that she's making satisfactory effort towards her goal. That's very important.
That is important because as part of your rehab plan, there will be a minimum GPA that's required in order for them to continue supporting you.
And they also want to make sure, especially here in California, that the classes you're taking are actually classes towards your goal, not, you know, movie making 101, unless that's your goal. In Regional Center, the same thing applies. For example, this year she applied for Section 8 housing and also made sure that she went to all of her medical appointments as well as updated medical information professionals that she is seeing so that the Regional Center can be aware of what she's doing as well. In conclusion, in order to get what she needs, she knows that persistence is a necessity. She also knows that she needs to have a relatively good picture of what she wants to accomplish, the people she needs to rely on to accomplish those goals, and the tools she needs. When she has all of that, giving my counselor a helping hand in moving forward never hurts. And those are the keys to her effective self-advocacy in both Department of Rehab and Regional Center. So it sounds like she's doing everything that we've talked about, that she's in good communication with her funders of tools, that she is aware of her goals, she is aware of her abilities and her needs, and she's able to communicate those effectively.
And she's taking an active role rather than a passive role.
Yep.
in her goals. Before I kind of summarize here, I wondered if there were any students in the audience who wanted to interject some helpful hints in terms of their own transition to college. Raise your hand if you have something to share. No? Okay. So to summarize what we've been talking about in terms of the college transition.
And, or any transition.
Right. Any transition must for success. Again, we can't emphasize enough the need for self-advocacy, the requirement for self-disclosure, and being proactive the way Rosalind was. Knowing your learning style, understanding your disability, asking for what you need. This is one place where no one's going to come up to you. You've probably had, you know, heard that expression socially as well. If you want to make friends, you need to go out and meet them. People are not going to come to you and ask you what you need or provide or read your mind. You need to ask, and you need to be proactive and assertive. One thing that's very helpful before you even enter college is to know about the technology that works for you. And again, there were a lot of questions about assessments and not knowing what's appropriate. It's really, really helpful to already have that determined before you enter college, to determine what it is that you use, to trial it, and to know how to use it. Because there's two parts to knowing the technology. One is understanding how to work and operate the program, and the other is understanding how to apply it to make a difference in your schoolwork. So knowing how to implement it, how to use it effectively to get your assignments done and to save you time and to improve your output and your comprehension. So
So again, get that assessment, no trial, be ready to start up on your technology when you hit the floor running when you get into college. When you're looking at technology, you want to capitalize on your strengths and circumvent your specific challenges. So we call this feature matching. It's not important what brand or what type of technology. What's important is that it meets your specific needs and challenges. But remember, the technology is not the panacea. It's not going to be the magic bullet for everything, and different technology is going to work well for different people. So what maybe is really successful for another one of your clients might not meet the need of another client. Again, you have to look at the specific challenges that you want to address and try to find technology that provides that feature. So learning both the strategies and the application for the technology is the key to making life easier and getting through your curriculum.
And this really, these transition musts really don't just go for college. They can go for employment too. I mean, you just worked with a gentleman with his, their employer, right? Who has, this is a gentleman with dyslexia. He's not in the Department of Rehab. He was not in any of these other systems, yet he needed tools so that he could successfully write reports at work because his dyslexia was interfering with his ability to do those reports. So he came in with his employers to find the appropriate tools. They went back, they tried out some things, and he found something he liked that worked, right?
And they trialed it for a month.
Right. And now they're asking the HR department at that employment to purchase it for him with the managers backing him up. So you don't, a lot of people think, oh, the only place that I'll get assistive technology for employment is through DR. Not necessarily. If you're already working there and you need a tool because they've added additional job duties to your job, the employer is responsible. But again, you have to be able to ask for what you need, know what works for you, be able to trial use that technology. See, all of these things are applied not just in college, but for any transition you're doing.
And you need to constantly reassess because your needs are going to change. Now, maybe when you start out at college, you need a note taker, but then you discover the LiveScribe pen, and that's an effective tool for you, and you no longer need a note taker. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you get to college and you've never needed to use text-to-speech software, but all of a sudden the reading load is so heavy, you're finding that you're falling behind. Maybe that's the time to go in and get trained at your DSS office on how to use that software. So you need to constantly be reassessing and self-evaluating because your needs will change. So we did, we want to end with a few resource slides for you. And the first one is on self-advocacy resources. You can see that that's probably, if we've driven home nothing else, that's kind of a main focus here. So there's some resources here on the slide from YO, Disabled and Proud Resource Section. There's several. They have a Youth Transition Toolkit, a Disability Benefits Information, and Disability Disclosure. So all those URLs are on the slide.
Oh, next. Okay.
Me, I'm pulling down. Then there's also additional resources. WADI has a Teacher Resource and Student Resource Transition Portfolio, and there's a link for that. There's also a transition planning workbook for families and students with disabilities. And it's not specific to AT, but again, the ideas behind it can apply to AT as well. And there's an continuing on that slot, continuing with those resources is a qualities, quality indicator of our technology transition, a family information guide to assistive technology and transition planning, and assessing assistive technology by Disabilities Rights California and Rights Law. So all of those URLs are present on those slides. Also, there is LD Online, www.ldonline.org, has transition and self-advocacy. And that's specifically about self-advocacy and college students. And don't let the LD part throw you because, again, the idea behind that is for any disability. Then there's also www.accessproject.colo.edu, and they have a really nice student self-advocacy handbook for students with disabilities.
Can you hear self-advocacy in there again?
We can't.
It's overkill here.
Yeah.
And lastly, I did want to just give you a few books that you, and again, Bookshare, if you are a member, will have many more. But there's a list of some books on preparing students with disabilities for college success, Practical Guide for Transition, A College Guide for Students with Disabilities. Oh, and I know what I wanted to add before is that when Debbie was talking about how important it is to check out not just the college, but to tour the Disabled Student Services Department, we've all probably had the experience where you read something on paper and it sounds wonderful, and you'll hear all the key words, accommodations, note takers, tutors, support, but those words have a different meaning at each college. You know, for some college, oh yes, we're accessible, and their idea of accessibility is, oh, we provide e-text and note takers. Other colleges will actually have specialized tutors, they'll have technology training, they'll have maybe a caseworker or a counselor to talk to about the stresses of being a student at college with a disability. So again, it's really important to go beyond what's written and really check it out yourself.
Yeah, and funny story, have to interject. This is the last slide, so I know I ramble and we're almost out of time, but I have to just quickly send you this information. It's just kind of funny. We were doing our college tours again with my son, who does use a wheelchair. Our sort of litmus test for accessibility on each college was we would randomly pick a building and figure out how to get into it with his wheelchair. And it was just any random building. And we found one college, and this one went off the list as well, where the building we picked did have an elevator, but it was around behind the building. It was an outside lift that you needed to have the key for, and it was covered in ivy. So you can guess how well it has used. And the only and it wasn't marked. There was no wheelchair signs leading us there. The only building that had appropriate wheelchair signage and a ramp and everything else beautifully signed was the bookstore. Yes, they wanted your money. They didn't want you. So we decided that wasn't the college gym, and that was a college in California. So again, it is important when you're looking at colleges to look for what you need, make sure you are comfortable on that campus in every aspect. And that goes for employment as well. So we're going to stop talking at you and give you an opportunity to ask questions. We are very grateful for this opportunity to do this.
Oh, great. Thank God.
So if there's any questions, this is your chance. Otherwise, thank you very much for participating. Yes, go ahead.
And I'm starting a youth empowerment program here, so I wanted to get it all
we can hear you
geared up and directed towards youth. That's why I'm in these seminars. My question was, is this going to be available in hard copy anywhere so I can get a copy of it so I can use it as a reference for my students?
I do know that you should have been emailed a electronic copy that you can make a hard copy from. That would be a good question for Rosemary. Do you know, can you send him one? File, ATN Transition PowerPoint hard copy? That would be fine with me if you can do that.
Debbie, yes. I just recently sent out the PowerPoint presentation, and for those of you that are on teleconference, we will have to send it via email to the listserv. But you, for those of you in the webinar, I pushed out the PowerPoint, and you should have received a dialogue message asking you to save your PowerPoint onto your local machine. If you did not receive that dialogue message, I can resend the invitation. I'm sorry, not the invitation, the PowerPoint.
Yeah, because I was on the computer with it, and then my computer kind of sort of took a spill electronically. So if you could email it to me directly, that would be great.
Okay, sure, no problem. Once the webinar is finished, I'll get your email address if you can hang on for a few minutes.
Yeah, I will. Thanks.
Sure, no problem.
Well, if there's no more questions,